All right. The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about 1 hour. We assume that you are not, we assure you that you are not obligated to participate and may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website to be identified by names as the person who was interviewed. Should you have any questions about the project, please contact Professor Tim Miller at 785-864-7263 or at tkansas@ku.edu. If you have any questions about your rights as a research participant, you may call the Human Subjects Protection Office at 785-864-7429 or email mdenning@ku.edu. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Excellent. First question is, what is your name?
Father Timothy Sawchak.
Excellent. What is the name and address of your church?
Holy Trinity Orthodox Church, 11901 Flum, Overland Park, Kansas, 66213.
Excellent. What is the denomination of your church?
Orthodox. Orthodox Christian, so, and we're part of the Orthodox Church in America.
Excellent. Can you tell me a little bit more about the Orthodox Church in America?
So the OCA, shortened for Orthodox mm-hmm. Church in America, was initially part of the Russian Orthodox Church, and then in 1970 was granted, this is a big word, autocephaly, which means that it administers itself. So we don't have an administrative tie to the Russian Church anymore. So there were churches here in America that would have been founded roughly around the time of 1900 or so, that were part of the Russian Church that then became in 1970 part of the Orthodox Church in America.
Excellent. Where are you from?
I was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania, when my dad was in seminary. But my father is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he was a priest, so we moved around a bit. So we lived around the Pittsburgh area. We lived just south of Erie, Pennsylvania for a while. Then we moved to Los Angeles, lived there for a year and a half, then to St. Louis, where I went. So I Melville High School, so I went from eighth grade through high school in St. Louis, and then when I graduated from high school, came to KU, studied architecture, and then when I was done at KU, went to St. Vladimir's Seminary in New York, mm-hmm. and then my first parish assignment was south of Pittsburgh, so I was mm-hmm. back there. I was there for 3 years, then to Cleveland
okay.
For 7.5 years. And then back here in 2005.
Wow, you've traveled around quite a bit.
I have, yes.
That's wonderful.
So I'm not a Kansan by birth, mm-hmm. but I have a lot of history to the state. My wife, her mother was born in outside of Goodland, Kansas.
Mm, okay.
Bird City, Kansas.
That's cute. So I guess you already answered my next question, is where did you work before you came to Kansas, but you've already given me that. And then you said you moved to Kansas when you were in college, and what about time frame? What was that time?
So I started at KU in the mm-hmm. fall of 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I went to KU.
Okay, and then you came back here to this church in 2005?
April 2005.
Excellent. So what have been the biggest differences between your previous experiences in other states and in Kansas in regards to being an Orthodox priest?
I would say that the biggest difference is the geographical difference was that when I was in the Pittsburgh area and the Cleveland area, we were in a very ethnic area.
Mm-hmm.
So there were lots of Russian Slavic people that were mm-hmm. in those areas, as well as many other neighborhoods and stuff like that. But the church was definitely seen there from the outside as being more of an ethnic thing. So so more of the contact there was when we would sell pierogies, and it was really connected with food a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, so one of the simple answers to that is that we have had many more people who are converting here in Kansas mm-hmm. than it was in Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Because it was
the numbers, you know. Yeah, because it was seen more as like an ethnic cultural thing, not particularly something that, I mean, they knew it was a church and everything, but there wasn't as much of a religious connection to it. So that's definitely one of the differences, just sheer numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Being here, I've been here now for well over 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
We've always had someone coming into the church, at least someone, usually more than that. So I would say that that's one of the bigger differences. The other one I would characterize as not being particularly geographic,
mm-hmm.
But just simply that there's been a change in the Christian culture, I think, in this country since I was ordained a priest back in 1994. So we see lots of people coming here that are coming from a quote-unquote evangelical mm-hmm. Protestant world, whereas back when I was in those other parishes, it was mostly coming from what we would call as mainline Protestant.
Mm. And why do you think there's that shift?
I think one of the shifts is that mainline Protestantism mm-hmm. has declined.
Mm-hmm.
For lack of a better term, the mega church mm-hmm. has grown.
Yeah,
it's become mega, so I think that's one of the differences. Mm-hmm. And it's also that people that come now that are converting, they have very complicated stories. And 20 years ago, it wasn't as complicated. You know, somebody 20 years ago would say, I grew up in the Lutheran church, you know, and for whatever reason, you know, I found the Orthodox church and I'm interested. Now, when I talk to somebody, it's that, well, you know, we went for 2 years to this church and then 3 years to this other non-denominational church and went to all these different things. It's gotten much more complicated. As to where people are going and everything, and which has led obviously to different theologies and stuff mm-hmm. like that too.
Yeah, so, I can definitely see that.
Yeah.
So, how many converts would you say you have in your parish?
I would estimate it at about 70%.
All right.
So the majority of the people have not grown up in the church.
Mm-hmm.
In this parish.
I remember we talked about that on the yeah. phone. So I know we just discussed how complicated it is saying, oh, I'm converting from one denomination to another. Do you mind expanding on that, on like what mainly other religious denominations your parishioners are converting from, or if there's any one?
Yeah.
Or I know there are probably there's a lot. There's a yes. lot.
It's all over the board. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, people have come from Baptist backgrounds, mm-hmm. Nazarene backgrounds, and then just kind of non-denominational mm-hmm. Backgrounds. Very few have come from the Roman Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
and not as many from. I can't think of anybody coming from the Presbyterian Church.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few Lutherans, mm-hmm. Some Methodists. Now, mixed in with that is that people would have said that I was Lutheran, and I was Methodist, and I was non-denominational.
Trying all these, yes, yeah.
And all kinds of different things. And I will say that for me, right now,
mm-hmm.
It's very confusing too.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. I mean, if somebody says like United Church of Christ, I think that could mean a lot of different things, you know? So I'm my learning curve, it's really taken off too. So, I would say that it's not just one place that we're seeing people come from.
Mm-hmm. Just a, big old mash. Would you say there's anything unique or interesting about Midwestern conversion narratives as opposed to what you might have found in the other places where you've overseen various parishes?
Now, part of that is simply because I had a lot less of that happening mm-hmm. in those other parishes, okay? The other difference, which is huge in all of this, is that when I moved here in 2005, the internet already existed, but it was really picking up. The biggest difference is that somebody who came to me 20 years ago and was interested in converting, and again, I don't think it mattered geographically mm-hmm. where it was, they were saying that, well, you know, I heard something about the Orthodox Church, so I want to check it out. Mm-hmm. Now somebody says, I've been reading about the church for 3 years, and now I want to check it out.
Yeah.
Because I've been reading online. So that's been a huge difference, which I don't think affects geographically at all mm-hmm. What's happening.
But you've got people coming in with like a solid knowledge base. Like,
they are, yeah. Yes.
That's wonderful. Yes. So what do you think are some of the main driving factors behind conversion to the Orthodox Church in America, especially in Kansas? I know I've read a lot of stuff about, especially in regarding like ethnic churches, like the Serbian Orthodox Church, okay. intermarriage yes. is one of the main driving yes. forces. But yes. what do you think in this particular...
At least for me, it's mm-hmm. rare. I will say I think I know the reason.
Okay, yeah.
So
wonderful.
And again, this might be people coming from different backgrounds. And to make my point, I want to do a compare-contrast.
Okay.
Okay? My father-in-law was born and raised in the Episcopal Church. He converted to Orthodoxy in the 80s because he was mad. I mean, he was ticked off, okay? I don't think, since I've been here in Kansas, that people coming into the church, I've ever met anybody who said they're mad.
All right.
I do not think that's the case. What they have said, so I'll make like a scenario which groups almost everything together. Mm-hmm. People are saying that I think there's something missing. Okay. They're not saying that they're mad about where they are, but they just feel as though something is missing. So I've done this now. I have asked people after the fact, if I tell you now and give you a word of what you are missing, am I on the right track? Mm-hmm. And they have all told me yes. Sacrament. That is what they're saying. So the Orthodox Church is mm-hmm. Eucharistic. I mean, every Sunday liturgy is Eucharistic. Mm-hmm. There could be a liturgy every day. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then include with that confession, marriage, unction. I mean, just go down the list.
You do the sacrament with all church functions or not church functions, but, weddings and such.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So of course other churches do mm-hmm. weddings too. Mm-hmm. That's common to yeah. everybody, but really the regular normal life of the church to mm-hmm. be sacramental, that's the thing that I think people have found lacking, and they don't even know, they can't put the word on that when it's mm-hmm. happening. And that, like I said, I've asked people after the fact, 'cause I want to test my theory. They've said yes, that's one thing that they missed. And that is very common now also when people come into the church. We don't go fast, okay? We take things very slow. And for many people, that was incredibly frustrating because they wanted the Eucharist. You know, and it wasn't until they were done with the process of going through being catechized and everything mm-hmm. that they receive the Eucharist, and they get frustrated with that because that's what they want.
Yeah.
You know, so if it was happening where they were coming from, it was infrequent, mm-hmm. you know, and it might have just been completely absent.
from some of the Anglican, not Anglican.
Oh, I don't know. I don't. Probably not. Yeah, probably not in that particular denomination. But again, people. I mean, if it's in that kind of non-denominational realm, I think that's the case. And I mean, I have to be careful because I don't know everything.
Yeah.
You know, but I think it is safe to say that it might be more on the infrequent basis too.
Gotcha.
Then there's also the issue that's there too of that. The Orthodox Church would believe that this is the body and blood of Christ, and even if there's a Eucharistic Church, it might be more on the line of thinking this is a symbol.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right, wonderful, that's fantastic. Thank you. Do you have any especially interesting interactions or narratives that you'd like to share?
Absolutely.
Conversion, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Go wild, yes. Yeah.
So I. One particular couple, they came to us. I forget actually what background it was. Mm-hmm. I think it was kind of a mixed bag of different Protestant churches. So I remember vividly on Easter morning, the first time that they were here for that. And I just asked them, I said, "So how do you feel right now?" Mm-hmm. And with tears in their eyes, they said, "We've been Christians all our life, but we never celebrated the resurrection." And that was very striking to me. You know, I've used that story very a lot of times. You know, so that's one particular one. One that kind of encapsulates a lot of people. And this is the hardest part, I think, of coming into the Orthodox Church. It's liturgy, because it's so, excuse the pun, but it's so foreign to most people, and it's so different that it's a huge hump to get over. Like I said, I mean, people read for years, you know, that it's an intellectual thing, but what they've lacked is just the experiential part. And boy, that's tough at first, you know, because it's just so different than what they have known. The irony to it is of course, that this is the ancient way of doing it, you know. But to them, it's all new. And like, how could this be? But one of the things that I'm able to do in a parish that has so many people who have come in as converts is I can point them in the direction of, you know what, go talk to her because she really struggled with that, you know. But she got through it.
Like a support.
Yeah, absolutely. Sort of. Absolutely. Excellent. And that helps a lot, you know, that somebody could talk to somebody else who was going through, you know, really struggling with this. So that's kind of a common story that happens. Mm-hmm. And then one other particular story, one gentleman, I got a phone call here at the church. He said, "I'm interested in Orthodoxy. I'd like to come to talk to you." And I don't think he told me that, you know, he had done lots of reading and stuff like that. So the next day he came by and we're sitting like this in the office, and there was a pregnant pause. So me being smart, you know, I figure, well, let me get things going, you know. So I said, well, you know, we kind of hit a little lull there. And I said, a lot of common questions come from people who are new to the church. Mm-hmm. And I said, one of the common questions is about Mary. Mm-hmm. And he yelled at me. and he said, "Father, if I had an issue with Mary, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you." You know, so it points to the fact that he had done a lot of reading already, you know, and again, I thought I was being smart, and here's a topic that we can talk about. He's like, "That's okay. We don't need to talk about that." So,
hopping off that, for example, someone wants to have a discussion about Mary. What is that? What's the, I don't want to say issue. What's the sort of discussion around that?
So often the discussion begins with that people think that we're exactly the same as mm-hmm. the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And there is a theological difference that's there, especially when it comes to Mary. So that really gets a good discussion going. Mm-hmm. That's a very common thread also that happens, that people do think that the Orthodox and the Catholic Church are exactly the same. Now, of course, historically, there's lots that is shared, but there are differences to it as well. And that's usually a good conversation to have, just to be able to say, okay, this is what we are, this is what we aren't. But I think I'm being stereotypical, which is unfair to do that. But a lot of times people have heard that the Catholic Church, the Orthodox Church, they just pay too much attention to Mary, and that that's wrong to do that, or that she's elevated to a level, you know, that is really above kind of just being human or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then we have to talk about that the Orthodox Church does not do that. Mm-hmm. And that she's a great example for us to follow, you know. So mm-hmm. I think that kind of characterizes what happens with that. Another common topic that comes up is iconography, too. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times people have heard that this is idol worship. And then we go through an explanation of saying it's not. But like I said, sometimes I don't need to have that conversation at all because they've already read all about it.
Yeah.
You know, I just can't stress enough how educated people come in, mm-hmm. you know, and it's very possible that they've read more than the person who grew up in the church. That's very possible.
Yeah, I can see that. How long does the conversion process take for?
Right. So I usually not legalistically, mm-hmm. but we look at a year.
Okay.
There's two reasons for that. And the second reason I've added sort of later into the equation. Mm-hmm. The first one is just incredibly practical. Mm-hmm. I just want people to be able to experience a full liturgical year. And I kid with them all the time. I say, look, I mean, I don't want you to come into the church after 3 months, and then the next Sunday you come, you see that we sacrifice chickens. You know? I mean, I want you to be, we don't. I mean, but mm-hmm. I want them to be able to see everything, mm-hmm. you know, because they have every opportunity to say, look, I don't want to do this, mm-hmm. you know. So again, that's just on a very practical level. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I've added to the equation now, the past 5-6 years, is that I also want people to be able to see the warts of the church, and that we're not perfect. There are disagreements that happen. There are scandals that happen, you know, not really on the local level, thank God, but nationally there have been things happen. Somebody coming into something can be rosy-eyed, you know, and think, I mean, I'm heading into something that's just perfect, you know, or maybe they're leaving something that it was because of something that happened, you know, maybe a scandal or something. I want to get away from that. But for people to see that we're not perfect and things do happen and people fight, it's like any family at all. The more I think they can see that, the more mature they'll be about their decision to come in, you know, that it's not that I'm just simply looking for perfection.
Yeah.
And that takes a little time for that to happen as well. Roughly we'll look at that year. People, because of situations, it's happened sooner than that. And it's happened a lot longer than that, too. I mean, mm-hmm. we had one gentleman who was a catechumen for 7 years. So there's no magic number to it at all. For each individual, it also, I would say that we're going to go through this on an individual basis, because people are coming from such varied backgrounds, mm-hmm. that it's not fair to just put everybody in a box and do the same thing with them.
Mm-hmm. Completely fair. Can you walk me just through very basic what your typical Sunday morning looks like?
My Sunday morning?
Yeah.
Or the church?
Either one.
Okay. Whichever. Well, So anybody who knows me knows that I am, maybe not never, but incredibly rare that I would be late. Okay. Right. And my definition of that is that I would be very early. Okay. I mean, so I'm here an hour early at least, and usually on Sunday, probably even a tad earlier than that. Mm-hmm. So I just like to be able to shift gears, mm-hmm. you know, and get into the moment and really think about what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So on a Sunday morning, there's a lot to be thinking about. I hopefully by Sunday morning, I have a sermon that's ready to go, which can change. I mean, so I have to be open to that. Mm-hmm. So there's just lots of thoughts happening. I don't know what the particular theme of this particular Sunday is, things like that. And then, of course, there's just thinking about all the different things happening with people and everything like that. So, I don't know what else. I don't know what you're looking for.
That's fair.
Practically. I mean, simply stated, I mean, then we begin liturgy. Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. fair. Anything else you think I should know going into my other interviews?
I don't know. I think that in the interviews you'll be able to pick up how similar people have had what happened, or maybe their story about how they encountered the church, but how unique it is too, and how different it is. I will say another thing too. I mean, sometimes it's couples. There might be spouses mm-hmm. who are coming into the church, and very often they're on different levels. One is that you know, I've read for 7 years and I'm ready to do this, but my spouse, no, they're you know, they're not ready to go at all. Mm-hmm. So that's not uncommon for that to happen. In fact, sometimes people are very absolute about saying, like, I will not do this. More often than not, the person who says that actually does come in. But there's some very interesting stories, I think, that couples can tell you
okay.
about their journeys and how that all came about as well. But I also think that you'll hear some wonderful stories just about how it happened, mm-hmm. you know. And they're all fascinating.
Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.